And welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast. Our title and topic is all about you as a finalist. It's entitled You and the Two Other Candidates. And hopefully you will be a finalist in the very near future for that special job you really want. And when that happens, we want you to be ready, looking forward to the interview, rather than being intimidated about what the other candidates might say. Today, you have advice from two seasoned veterans who have coached hundreds and hundreds in their job search. And to help me with this topic, I am joined by a long-term expert on job hunting, Linda Baugh out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Linda's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, Linda, out of Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hi, John. It's nice to be with you today.
Good to be with you. Linda has been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1985. She's president and founder of ACE Executive Careers. Linda began her profession as a headhunter, and there she learned how to help people get hired. And from there, she expanded her expertise to include helping clients at mid-career find their occupational sweet spot. Linda has published numerous articles and is a sought-after speaker. Now, for the first 30 minutes of our show, Linda and I will talk about our topic. It's you and two other candidates. And we will take a short break after that and begin to answer your job hunting questions, which we have received by email. Okay, Linda, let's get into this topic, what our listeners need to know when they are a finalist in a job interview. And the whole idea here is we're isolating a particular part of the job search to that unique pinnacle. It's that winner circle, so to speak. And most people are just so happy to be finally selected that perhaps they haven't thought about this piece. Now, Linda, how important do you think really understanding and being ready and primed for this finalist interview really is?
Well, it's going to make the difference between getting the gold, John. If you think about the Olympics in the individual events like the like swimming or the gymnastics, there are three stands at the end, first, second, and third, and the difference between gold, silver, and bronze is like 0.023. And right? And it's great to be in the finalists, but the difference between who's going to get the offer or not could be, you know, a hair's breadth. So the preparation is crucial to get the goal.
Absolutely, yes. And we need to say it doesn't happen all the time, but occasionally what can happen is when a panel chooses their finalist, make the offer, something goes sideways, and that first pick turns the job down, or something occurs then they go to their second. So the party's not over if a person isn't selected as a finalist. There's a 5% chance that might occur, and having been a finalist means that the organization has invested a tremendous amount of interest in the individual, and it's possible that in the months down the road, if things are handled correctly, there might be a new opportunity, especially if some good, strong relationships are developed. Have you seen that happen, Linda?
I actually have a story about that, John, and if you'd like it now, that's okay, or we could save it till later.
Do it.
Okay, I was working with a gentleman who was a finalist for a Fortune 500 company that's headquartered here in Arizona. And, I mean, he went through like five interviews. They flew people in to see the final finalists. They had to make presentations. And when he was notified that he wasn't selected, that he was number two, boy, he was dragging, you know, put a lot into it. Mm. But then here's what he did. he went back to the executive that had been the point person. He invited him to lunch, and he said, "I know that you guys think a lot of me." And the person said, "Oh, we do. You know, it was so hard making that decision. You know, we had such excellent finalists. Yes, we think you're wonderful." And so he actually asked the executive to help him with referrals into other companies, which he did because they thought so much of him.
Yeah, and it's this is a theme that we have said on other Job Seeker broadcasts. It's all about relationships. And so when our listener gets to that place where they are a finalist, one thing they can feel good about is that they are being valued. There is something about them that clicks with the company or the organization, and they need to put that wind in their sails. But there are two others. Now, just to put this in perspective, we need to understand who might those two others be. Well, one of the others might be an inside candidate, somebody mm-hmm. that currently works for the company.
Mm-hmm.
That other person just might be a friend of someone that works in the company, or a friend of someone on the board, or a friend of one of the executives.
Right.
Certainly, all those finalists have equal credibility as far as credentials towards that position. And I would say the more that our listener can learn about the advantages and disadvantages of the finalists, and perhaps a little bit about why they had been selected, is the board, is the screening process, are they happy with the quality of candidates they have, et cetera, et cetera. You're not going to get an itemized list of candidate A, these are the advantages of this. You're not going to get that. But if you can get some flavor, that would be helpful. Now, as we're getting started in defining this, there's one major must-do. And you and I have talked about this, Linda, and that is don't assume that the people conducting the interview have remembered all that transpired previously, your resume,
exactly.
Cover letter, correspondence, prior interviews. Don't expect that. Expect that they need to hear the good stuff again with maybe a little polish. It's almost like your favorite song. You want to hear it again exactly the same way you heard it before and again and again. And they want to hear that there is good reason for you having been selected as a finalist, and you are saying to them, these are the strong things. Now, there are three strong things that you must summarize and boil down. And hopefully by this time you have discovered what the items are that they are most interested in about your background compared to what you were assuming the first round of interview. So item number one, you must reinforce why you're interested in the organization, why you're interested in this position, and even throw in a few extra things that you have learned since your last interviews that endear you even more, that get you even more positive and more excited. Any more research you can do about the organization and that you can explain is a huge asset. Number two, boil down your golden nuggets, the key points, the skills, the education, the experience you've had. Boil it down to three, no more than five, really key points. Summarize those again. And then lastly, be sure to clarify why your very last position or your current position has equipped and prepared you for this one. Now, Linda, any other key things that our listener needs to reinforce of prior information that may have come up in the previous interviews?
Yes, and I like that very much, John. And by this time, our candidate has learned a lot about not just the external posting, but they've learned about the internal workings of the company and what the needs are. And if they have in the past interviews given specific examples of how they have solved similar problems or managed similar projects, it's a great time to bring those specific examples up again. Of the best predictor of future success is having handled past challenges that are similar.
Absolutely.
And so those stories, those examples of past accomplishment that are parallel to the challenges that this company is having. I'm quoting Lou Adler here, the guru of executive recruiting, who says the best predictor of future success is past performance that's quantified. So we'll advise our candidates to quantify the results and the accomplishments. That's one point, John.
Yeah, and I would even say in that context, Linda, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it would even be an advantage to say, as I have gotten to know your company better and as I have benefited from the interviews, I've learned and state two or three things,
mm-hmm.
and then that becomes your entree to exactly what you were saying, Linda.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned that the company is going through a significant effort to reevaluate the products that are most profitable and to start whittling away at the products that are not as profitable assets to the company. And we just went through that process in XYZ,
right.
in the organization I worked for, and we learned, and boom, boom, boom.
Right.
So that there's an opportunity there. Now, as you and I, Linda, talked about this in preparation for our broadcast, you mentioned several really key principles that you share with your clients when they're at that level. So give us a couple of those that you have found really made a difference for your clients.
Thank you, John. And one of those that you and I talked about the other day is a very subtle psychological term called primacy recency, and that is we humans tend to remember in our experience the first time that we did something and the most recent time that we did something. And applying this to the candidate, I coach my candidates to ask the question, when is the last interview? I would really prefer to be the last candidate interviewed. And the reason for that is that's the recency. You're the most recent candidate. What if they convene right after the last candidate into their decision-making meeting? And you are the freshest candidate on their mind. And then there are statistics. It's somewhere between 54 and 57% of people hired were the last candidates interviewed.
Linda, we're coming to the break. Just hold that thought, and we'll pick it up right after the break.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. Since the mid-70s, I've been counseling men and women who have hit a dead end in their career and feel like they don't have any possibility of finding a fulfilling job.
So you're saying that there is hope for some of us who are stressed out or don't like our work?
That's right, Evan. I think we're all aware that over 50% of employed adults state that they do not enjoy their work and that they would look for another career if they just knew how.
Well, I know you can't give us a silver bullet to know how to do it, but can you toss us some nuggets to ease the pain?
Certainly, Evan. What we have found in over 30 years and 30,000 adult clients is that a good job fit requires two important basic ingredients.
Okay, you have my attention. What are those two basics?
The two basics for a good job fit are, first, having a passion for what you do, something you really like, something which gives your life meaning and purpose. Okay, I guess I figured that one out, but what is the second basic?
The second basic for a good job fit is something you are naturally good at doing, something that fits your wiring, something that brings out the best in you.
So you're saying that you must like the job and also be naturally good at doing it, right?
That's the starting point, Abbott.
Okay, well, we need to get back to our broadcast. We'll talk more about finding a job you can really be good at doing at our next break. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's pick up where we left off.
And we are back to our Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic for today is being the finalist for that ideal job that you really, really are seeking. And my guest today is Counselor Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see Linda's picture and bio on our website. So, Linda, just before the break, you were bringing one of your key principles that you use to coach your clients when they're selected as finalists. And you said, try to get the very last person being interviewed, if possible. Now, what came to mind as you were suggesting that was, is it okay to ask?
My goodness.
Is that protocol? Is that proper? You know, would anyone ever do that? Doesn't that sound presumptuous?
Well, it's a little bit like getting the home field advantage. And then those of our listeners who are sports fans understand if you're at your home field, your home court, you have an advantage. And so these are the questions I prompt candidates to ask. How many candidates are being interviewed? How long should I expect to be there? Who will I be speaking with? Is it a panel or is it one-on-one? And then when you know that you're one of three finalists, and we know the concept of primacy recency, recency being the favored position, you try to get the last position. Now, if that spot is already taken, then you can ask, well, what would be the first time available? Because when you're the first candidate, you can go in with the feeling, you know what, I'm just going to knock their socks off. Everybody after me is going to have to measure up to that.
Yes. Now, we want to get back to some things to do during the interview to knock their socks off. But I want to go back to a very important thing, this list that you have just recited. Very, very important. And, Linda, help us try to, let's say, how should the listener bring up the fact that they have some questions and do it in a, the word that comes to mind is humble and not arrogant way. You know, now that I'm a finalist, you better tell me the following. What's a pleasant and very diplomatic way for the listener to say, oh, thank you, and could I ask some questions? You know, something. How do you phrase that?
Well, let's just say that the person that's doing the scheduling is not the hiring manager, but is that person's assistant or it's an HR person. And the candidate could just very nicely say, you know, I'm so pleased that you've contacted me as a finalist, and I really want to be prepared for this meeting. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions so that I can be better prepared?
There you go. That's it. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions so I could be better prepared? Bingo. Excellent. Now, in your experience, Linda, how often is someone who has previously interviewed the candidate part of that finalist team, committee, or individual?
Sometimes another, if we're talking about a pretty senior level position, sometimes at least one person who's been involved in the process sits in, and you know, sometimes, John, tell me your experience, they're just one-on-one with the ultimate decision maker. What's your experience there?
Yes, that is my experience, and my experience, the most common that I've seen, is where the quote boss out of Chicago or the senior executive out of New York or so on is coming into town, and we're trying to arrange for you to meet this person.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to arrange for our finalists to meet this person. And I've heard that conversation two different ways. We in the sense of the person, this is the last person, the vice president, who is now talking to the candidate, I want you to meet with when he is here in town. And there isn't necessarily the statement, you're one of the finalists.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be an assumption, and that your question is certainly a good one. It says, oh, well, to help me better prepare, are there other individuals that will be meeting with the director or the president or the board member or the board chairman and so on? So that tends to be the scenario. And also, what I've experienced is that the framework of that finalist interview tends to be more casual, like lunch or usually a meal.
That's something to be really prepared for, isn't it, John?
Absolutely, yes. Every second of that session is going to be very carefully evaluated, even though there aren't any questions asked. A lot of observation. We certainly can go there for a second. But I guess what I'm trying to identify here is our candidate having been selected or having been identified as someone worthy of meeting with that final person, it really helps if our candidate knows that the person they have last talked to is their favorite, but there may be other vice presidents or other regional directors that have their favorites, and they then have promoted. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And
right.
If our candidate finds that, then I would say another question to ask is, well, George, you have been so helpful. I've really appreciated getting to know you. I would really thoroughly enjoy working for you and your department. Can you give me a couple of pieces of advice? You know so-and-so the best, and I will try to, you know, get all that extra value-added points possible if there appears to be, hey, you're my favorite, I really hope you get this job kind of thing. And that could be, I've even had that from HR, where HR will step in and say, by the way, I hope you get the job, knowing that there are other finalists that, you know, have made that. So did
you
have some...
You have a champion, or you have someone who's willing to give you some tidbits. You know, even if, let's just say, you're going out to lunch with that executive from Chicago, and the advice might be, and this is the restaurant he really likes. Right?
Yeah.
Be sure to emphasize these things about your background. I agree.
Yes. Yeah, you know, he really, if there's one thing that our president really likes is someone who, boom,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
Now, it sounded to me when I brought up the meal thing that you jumped on that. It kind of hit a hot button for you. You got three zingers of what to do, what not to do at the meal?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, anecdotally, over the years, I have heard feedback when I was an executive recruiter, for instance, and, you know, with working with candidates, that's a make-or-break situation if a person has poor table manners or they order alcoholic beverages. You know, we could go on and on. You order something that you have to eat with your hands rather than with a fork, and, you know, it gets a little messy, or how they speak to or treat the wait staff. Do they even know how to use the proper implements in the proper way? Because the executive knows that the person they hire, they may have to send them to conferences, conventions, trade shows, you know,
customers.
Meetings with their clients and customers. Yeah.
Yeah.
They want to know that, you know, they know how to handle themselves.
Yeah. Now, we have to be careful that we're not putting fear and trepidation into our listener here, that they better brush up on their table manners. But we also are saying it would be good to be informed as to proper table manners, and that isn't a difficult subject to Google, just to get sort of the 10 things to do show that you have proper table manners. I mean, it would be a good thing. Or if you happen to know someone, I recall being in a situation where I was invited to a country club. It was very high end, and it was a colleague. And here we were, and it was very clear this was ultra exclusive. And much to the delight of my colleague, they were inviting us. There was a group of us that were invited. I was very self-conscious. All of a sudden, I was starting to remember. Now, my mother always taught me the first thing you do is take the napkin, and then this fork and that spoon and on. I was very self-conscious of that. Thankfully, I did remember a few things. But I can imagine if our client just isn't acquainted with those things.
Well, let's keep it simple then, John. Some guidelines that are very, very simple. Order something that you can eat with a fork, you know, not a sandwich or soup that you have to, you know, you might have an accident with or have it on your hands. And eat only half the meal. Remember, you're there to talk. And besides, you don't want to get feeling too full, which people get sleepy. And if you're going to go back to the location to have further discussions, I know it sounds like, gosh, I never thought of that, but most of us feel sleepy after a heavy meal.
Oh,
so keep it light, eat half the meal, no alcoholic beverages, even if the other person orders it. It may be a test in a way.
Yes, absolutely yes. And the attitude towards the waiter, waitress is another item. And I would say this, as in any situation where you are starting a conversation, particularly in an interview situation, have something prepared of a positive nature ready to say to break the ice, because it may surprise our listener that the individual that is there is very socially awkward. And we'll pick this up after the break.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some more questions about moving ahead when you're stuck in a lousy job going nowhere. John, in our last break, you gave us two basics which any fulfilling job must have.
That's right, Evan. Every fulfilling job must be something you like, something which gives you meaning and purpose. A second basic is having job duties which bring out the best in your natural strengths.
Okay, John, I've been thinking about that natural strengths part. What is the difference between a skill a person has learned from previous work experience and a natural strength or talent?
Well, Evan, each of us has a set of innate strengths which are part of our DNA. When we do career aptitude testing, we look for those and then match them to the things a person likes to do.
So what are some examples of these natural strengths?
Well, we have researched this extensively and have a database of over 90,000 career matches. In that range of careers, we find 54 distinct natural talents, which represent all of those 90,000 options.
90,000 career matches. Is that a big or small number? I was thinking of something like a million or so.
Well, actually, Evan, 90,000 is a very big number. Most all career tests commonly used by colleges only have 2,000 to 3,000 career options in the database. So 90,000 is huge in comparison. I think you were probably recalling employment statistics regarding millions of jobs rather than career options.
Okay, I see. So how does a person plow their way through 90,000 career options to find a fit? Maybe we can take up your answer at the next break.
Yes, sure.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our show.
We're back to our Job Seeker broadcast, and my special guest today is Counselor Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and we are talking about tips for when you are the finalist in your job search. Maybe there's one other, maybe there's two other, but you have now been selected as that finalist. And Linda, you and I have been talking about tips of what to do, and you mentioned something in our prior discussion that you encourage your clients to have prepared a 30, 60, 90-day proposal. Can you expand on that?
Well, I think it's a very good idea once the candidate has learned a lot about the company to come to that final table with some ideas about addressing some of the issues that they've discovered. Now, I think it's a fine idea, but when you and I were talking, actually, you came up with a little different twist on that I think is even more powerful. Would you mind telling our listeners about that?
Certainly. Well, this was going to be part of a question to you. I think the issue is, if there is a scenario where the candidate, if hired, is supposed to bring some change, a turnaround, a more aggressive market share, introduction of a new product, getting rid of something and replacing it with something else. The danger is if you jump in too quickly with, well, if I were hired, I would boom, 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 boom.
Mm-hmm.
There may be somebody listening to that scenario that doesn't like the plan. Mm-hmm. So there has to be somewhat of a careful introduction of your ideas after some evaluation has taken place. So I would go two ways. If I had the opportunity to share new ideas of a 30, 60, 90 day, my suggestion would be, Mr. Jones, one of the first things I've learned in every organization that I've worked for is there is a way that organizations turn. There's a certain way that things get done. And even though I've done my best to research, I really don't know what that is. And I know that I could have the greatest plan in the world, but if it doesn't fit within how things get done, then that whole thing is doomed to fail. So for at least my first 30 days, I would be focused on trying to understand how things get done, who the major players are, who the power brokers are, and then begin to sample the process of making suggestions and ideas. And sometimes the best way to get buy-in is to bring the key stakeholders together, almost like a task force, and have them start giving their ideas. Another way to do that is to say, I have been hired to bring about this change, and I am going to you because I see you are going to be a key player impacted by this change. Could you give me your thoughts? And literally go around to all the other directors, managers, significant contributors, and do that. So that would be the sort of the diplomatic way to start, and then begin to refine that. So you got a 60-day and then a 90-day of refining, pulling the ideas together, and so on. I certainly would want the person or committee that is part of this finalist round to know that I do have some very specific suggestions, but I'm subordinating those suggestions to what the other individuals in the company feel has been productive or not productive, and so on. And I have not yet had the opportunity to pull that. So I'm a little reluctant to come up with a great grandiose plan until I know what some of the possible obstacles and opinions and issues are. And then I might say something like, does that fit within what you feel is reasonable? Because if you are wanting something more concrete, I'd be happy to give you my outsider objectives, but I feel a little bit hesitant to do so without knowing who the stakeholders are and what their opinion is.
Mm-hmm.
That might do that. Now, I want to be quick to say, if our listener is being hired, the position is literally a change, turnaround, bootstrap, stop doing something, start doing something else, introduce a new product. If there's major change of some kind that's expected that the candidate is going to lead, then it's absolutely essential that after the offer is made, our listener gets the offer, that at that time, that new plan that the listener has be presented. This is after you get the offer, but before you accept the offer. And so
that's a critical point, John. Let's just emphasize that. Offer before you accept it. Go ahead.
Right. And if wired, required to bring about change because you happen to be the guru you know or your track record of is really, and they're desperate, they got to know, they got to do something. Well, the key thing is you have to make sure not only are you being hired, but your plan of what you think needs doing has to be accepted before you accept the job. In other words, they understand that if they hire you, you're going to do this. And you have gotten the okay to do this because a lot of times in organizations, the very thing that needs to be changed is so obvious, and the people wanting the change are the ones that are the problem. And you'll get caught in that trap if you don't have that prior approval, which you would then gain between the time you get the offer and you accept the offer.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen that happen in several cases with clients. This very conversation has absolutely been key to help them bring that about. And this is particularly in situations where it's a CEO, president, or the lead, the key person. That's so important. Okay. Now, any more on the 30-60-day plan proposal, Linda?
No, I think we've planted the seeds, with our listeners, John, that, it would certainly be a leg up, an additional plus if they, have come up with some ideas, we don't need to give away all of our expertise. And then your suggestion, if it's a turnaround, to get the plan accepted before the accepting the job, otherwise it's going to be total frustration.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, you begin to realize after 60 days that the very people that wanted the change are the ones that are saying, well, you know, that used to work, but it's not going to work here or so on.
Now, I call it the yubbets.
Oh, the yubbets.
Yubbets. You know, well, that's a good idea. Yeah, but we tried that. Yeah, but
yeah, right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you got it. Now, Linda, you brought up another very good point, and that is how to close the deal. Tell us about that.
Well, I like to keep it kind of simple. They often will ask, you know, why are you the candidate that we should select? And sometimes they don't ask that question. Either way, if they don't ask the question, I coach people to say, you know, thank you so much, Joe, for your time, or Bob, I have some feedback for you. And it's pretty much I'll call it a 1-2 punch, John. And it's not just going on and on about why they should hire you, but the first feedback is, I'd like to tell you what I like about the organization, the company, your product, the team, the people I've met, why I think I'd be a fit with the people, and then moving into the problems that one can solve. I would really like to be the person that comes on board. What's the next step?
Mm.
And you might have some words of wisdom that you use as well.
Yes. Well, I like your statement as a reminder, and this happens over and over and over again with clients. They just forget to close the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to put this in cement and get it hard real fast, let it, you know, shape up and harden real fast. After every employment interview, there needs to be some kind of summary close statement that brings everything to a pinnacle point and then suggests that next step.
Yes.
Linda, when you and I were preparing for this show, you had some wonderful just kind of one-liners that you like to use. I was in awe. You just, those things just come right off your tongue like you're drinking water. Give us a couple of those closing zingers that you like to use.
Well, you know, the first category is, you know, Bob, I'd really like to be the person that comes on board to help you solve these problems. And, you know, what's the next step? And this is just a little tidbit, but usually the next step is, well, you know, I've had these, you know, I've talked with, you know, three people. I need to talk with so-and-so and so-and-so, and I'll be getting back to you. And they give you, you know, 2 days, 5 days, a week. And what I coach my clients to say is, well, 5 days from now, okay, that would be such and such. I'll call you
before,
the following
we
day.
Have to, hold on, Linda. Let's wait until after the break. Okay,
right.
Thanks.
Hello, this is Evan Newman, back for a final two-minute broadcast break. John, in our previous break, you were talking about a database in your career match system of 90,000 career options. I ask, how does a person discover their best career or two from 90,000 possibilities?
Well, Evan, let's begin our advice by playing to our natural strengths, our hardwiring.
Well, what is so important about your emphasis on the hardwired part? Are there soft-wired traits?
Yes, we have both hard and soft-wired traits. We have those innate traits which make us who we are. These are our hardwired traits. We also have skills we have learned on the job or in a college degree program. These are the softwired traits. When you choose a career, you want to put your hardwired, your innate traits in first place.
Okay, so start with the hardwired traits. But you mentioned degree programs. I'm thinking of engineering, teaching, nursing, dental hygienist. Are those examples of learning softwired traits?
Yes, Evan. Each of those occupations represent advanced academic training, which prepares a person with skills to use on the job.
So what is the problem? Why are you separating these classroom skills from one's innate skills and choosing one's ideal career? Are you saying that a person cannot learn innate skills in the classroom?
Exactly, Evan. By definition, our hard wiring is part of our genetic code. On the other hand, a person can learn precision detail dental skills or problem-solving engineering skills or even classroom teaching skills. But every high school student will tell you there are some good teachers and there are some okay teachers and, well, there are some who should look to do something else.
So you mean to say that there are some naturally gifted teachers, dentists, engineers, nurses, and so on?
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. Why would someone choose a career and then pursue a degree to do something which he or she was not hardwired gifted to do? It doesn't make sense.
Well, sadly, it happens every fall term when campuses start up. Schools do not test for innate talent. That is, the hardwiring. They test for academic ability to learn a subject matter.
Wow, that seems like a lot of money spent and a lot of debt for the wrong profession.
Well, that's one way to look at it, Evan. We find that the average person under 30 years of age has enough reserve energy to make do if they lack the innate hardwired skills needed for a job. So as long as a person is 30 or younger and has a lot of self-discipline, they can do reasonably well in most any profession where they have received academic training.
Okay, what's the rub?
Well, the rub is that when the person is on the job, they are not able to move beyond the classroom skills they have learned unless they return to the classroom. They don't intuitively, in their core, understand what they're doing.
Wow.
Yep. They are limited in their ability to adapt and grow beyond the classroom instruction given.
You mean that a person who is not wired for the job is like a computer program which cannot intuitively grow beyond the original designs?
Yes. Not to intuitively grow on the job causes internal stress and certainly does not lead to fulfillment.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference Preferred Counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of our show. Let's return.
You bet. Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to our show.
We're back to our broadcast discussing tips and advice in case you become a finalist in a job interview sequence, and we know that's going to happen, and so we want you to be prepared. And my special guest today is Counselor Linda Baugh from Scottsdale, Arizona. Linda has been coaching men and women in their job search since 1985, has years and years and hundreds of client hours to offer here. Linda, just before the break, you were about to give us one of those one-liner zingers that I've realized you are so good at. And this was, you were going to give us the advice on what to say when the employer at that finalist says, well, I'll get back to you in so many weeks, so many days or week or so on. So go ahead.
Right. And so it's you've asked, you know, what's the process and when should I hear from you? Or the employer speaks up and says, well, I've got some decision-making to do, need to talk with a few other people. I'll be able to get back with you by the 15th. Then whatever that day is or how many days out it is, our responsibility as a candidate should say, you know, that's great. Now, if for any reason you and I have not connected by the 15th, I'll give you a call on the 16th. Because what most candidates get into is, well, he said it was going to be 5 days. It's been 10. When should I call? Should I email? What should I do? How am I going to find out what's going on? And this way, we've made a statement. We're going to make a call on the 16th. And then when you call on the 16th and you get the administrative assistant who says, was he expecting your call? What is this in reference to? You could say, certainly. I'm calling Bob as I promised I would today. None of this. I'm just following up, you know, to see what's happening with the job.
Right. Yes. Right. Absolutely. Yes. Getting permission to follow up on that key call is absolutely essential. And it should not be any surprise to our listener that when the 15th rolls around, that the company has yet not made the decision because some other things have come up, or they can't
right.
come to closure, or who knows what. And the smart candidate is the one that does get permission to call and calls and isn't just sitting there waiting to hear, but say, well, since we talked last, I have learned, and they have some new tidbit of something they've researched that mm-hmm. is a positive, a plus, for the benefit of the person they're calling.
Right.
And it's just a, oh, by the way, da-da-da-da-da, and I'm sure looking forward. How's it going in the decision-making as opposed to, well, have you mentioned?
Right.
Because that, I'd say 50% of the time, and that percent might even be low, whatever that date was, they still haven't made up their mind.
Mm-hmm.
It does. Yep, and it's not a comment against our candidate,
mm-mm.
but I do want to say that even at that very latest date, there still is opportunity to gain a competitive edge, and this just the tone of that phone call and that little tidbit and a reassurance, I am still very interested. And by the way, now, this is going to maybe sound a little sneaky. I don't know if you've tried this, Linda, but I have used this, and it has been a very, very successful tactic, and it is a tactic. Well, George, I appreciate getting a heads up on where you are. I am really interested in this position. And by the way, just to mention, as you know, I've been out job hunting, and I do have an offer pending with another organization. You are my preference, but it would really help me to know as soon as you can regarding your decision. Letting them know that you're a candidate somewhere else and that you have progressed along or something definitely pushes things quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as that phone call is over, that individual is going to call the other individuals to say, hey, so-and-so is a candidate. And really, I have found, Linda, I don't know if this is true for you, but the really good candidates go quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I coach employers on how to interview. And that's one thing I say, if you find somebody, move fast because that person's going to be gone.
Yep.
So.
Yes, I told employers the same thing when I was a recruiter. I'd get, well, I've only talked to one person. If that's the right person, don't wait.
You move on it, yeah. Well, Linda, you and I have succeeded in covering this topic for the majority of our hour here, and we hardly have just a few minutes to get on these job seeker questions. Can you pick
John,
a favorite here, and let's take a shot at it?
Yep, especially based on what we've been talking about today. This is a great one. It's from Carolyn in Washington. I got a new job 6 months ago. My new boss and I are not getting along. Should I stay or start looking? It took me a long time to get this job.
Wow. Well, I can tell you this. Carolyn made a big mistake when she accepted this job, not only by the fact that there was this impediment, but one of the things, Linda, that I do is once you get the offer, I press strongly on our clients to go talk to a colleague that reports to the same boss and get some questions answered. Can you help me understand the work culture here? What are the strengths of the boss, you know, so-and-so? Pat, what are Pat's strengths? And then are there some issues that frustrate you in Pat's management style? That's a diplomatic way of saying, you know, are there any problems here kind of thing. Absolutely essential to check around you accept the offer after you've had the offer. That's the only time in your entire employment history with that company that you will have the opportunity to find out what it's like to work here and to make correction. Because if you do find some, if you really want the job and you really find something that is a bad habit the boss has, this is the only time you can go to the boss and say, Pat, I just really like the company. I like this position. I see a great future here. In my research, though, I've come up with something, and they can mention it and say, is there a possibility that we could have an understanding that this is not going to interfere with our relationship? And that then, there's no legal thing on this, but when that problem thing comes up, our candidate, our listener, can then remind, you know, I accepted this job with the understanding that this would not come between us, and it has. And, you know, Linda, we are out of time. This has been a real joy. Thank you. Thank you for the great
ride. And so that wraps up our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAP Group. He has been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600, whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group. They have not paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. These questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.